purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Dr. David Naiman. Today's guest is Dr. William Kamen. Dr. Kamen is the director of obstetric anesthesia at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. Dr. William Kamen is also associate professor of anesthesia at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Kamen is an internationally recognized authority on pain control during childbirth and has appeared on various local and national programs, including The Today Show and Good Morning America. Dr. William Kamen is here today on Health Watch to talk about his book, Easy Labor, Every Woman's Guide to Choosing Less Pain and More Joy During Childbirth. If you'd like to join the conversation here on Health Watch today, the number is 503-231-8187. Welcome to Health Watch, Dr. Kamen.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start out. What prompted you to write this book? What did you hope to accomplish?
Well, the motivation for writing this book came from practicing obstetric anesthesia over 20 years and seeing a large majority of women coming into the labor and delivery unit with a wide variety of perceptions and many times misperceptions about what really goes on with regard to pain relief during childbirth. In large part, this was due to the wide variety of stories and rumors and variety of other things like that that get circulated among people out there as well as at the various childbirth classes. And what myself and my co-author wanted to do was really level the playing field and give a comprehensive book about pain relief during childbirth, which addresses all the issues, all the controversies with regard to not only the medical aspects of pain relief, but also all the alternative and complementary methods. And as I said, level the playing field so a pregnant woman is not really at the mercy of the stories and rumors that she may hear from her various colleagues and instructors during pregnancy.
Well, it seems like, as you say, women may be unprepared for what the experience is actually going to be like, and also it seems like they're unprepared for the variety of options they have. And one of the interesting things you point out is where they end up giving birth, the size of the hospital, whether they're at a hospital, and a variety of other choices can actually make a big difference on what their options will be in the end. So if they're not that prepared to begin with, they may have limited options in the moment.
Well, that's absolutely correct. I mean, the large majority of women give birth in a hospital, but there are a small percentage who give birth in birthing centers, and there's no question that the type of pain relief options that are available are different between the two different centers for giving birth. There's also a very small percentage of women who give birth at home. In this country, that's roughly about 1 to 2%, and we really don't address that in the book because that's a very different population. But with regard to hospitals and birthing centers, a woman really needs to be aware of what might be available or not available at her intended place of birth.
And that's also true. I believe you mentioned something about the size of hospitals, that some hospitals may have certain options that others don't.
Well, it's correct. Some of the larger hospitals will have anesthesiologists that are available on the labor and delivery unit full-time, and we really have to because of the volume of work that there is, whereas in some of the smaller hospitals, an anesthesiologist may be covering surgeries in the regular operating room as well as providing care on the labor and delivery unit. And in some of the very small hospitals, an anesthesiologist may be at home and is called in when needed for a particular case. So it may be that if you're at a larger hospital, for example, if you want an epidural, which is the most common kind of medical pain relief, that in many cases you could get one within just a few moments, whereas if you're at a very smaller hospital, it may be that you have to call the anesthesiologist in from home, and that could take upwards of a half an hour to an hour or more to provide the service.
Well, let's talk a little bit about epidurals. Could you address a little bit about both how effective they are and any safety concerns there may be around them?
Sure. Well, that's a huge topic. Just a little bit of background. In the USA today, there's roughly 4 million births per year, and the most recent surveys, nationwide surveys of pain relief during childbirth, indicate that roughly about 65% of women in this country will use an epidural anesthetic during their childbirth. So it's an extremely popular kind of method, and it's extremely effective, and it's probably why it's so popular. It really does provide almost complete pain relief for the entire duration of your labor. It can also be used for a cesarean delivery if that becomes necessary. And just briefly, what it is a small catheter, which is a small, thin plastic tube, which is inserted in the lower part of the back to the area where the nerves are that go to the lower portion of the body. It's a relatively simple procedure to insert. It takes just a few moments. It's done with a local anesthetic in the skin. And once the catheter is inserted, then the anesthetic medication is given through the catheter, and the nerves become numb, and there is pain relief for the labor pains. And one of the reasons it's become more popular over the years, as I mentioned, the most recent survey shows that about 65% of women will use this, whereas roughly 20 years ago, that number was about 20%. So it's really increased in popularity. And one of the reasons is not only because it's so effective, but because it has become a lot safer than in previous years. And you asked a very important question, which is about risks and side effects. Well, the fact is that the kind of medications which are used in the epidural anesthetics today are very different than what used to be used several decades ago. And it used to be, say, prior to the mid-1980s or so, if someone had an epidural during labor, they were essentially without any feeling from the middle of the abdomen, middle of the waist on downwards. The legs could not move. It interfered with even just moving from side to side in bed. It interfered with being able to push out the baby when it came time to the later stages of labor, where one, you know, actually has to push the baby. And there were a lot more problems with blood pressure and things of that nature, whereas the kind of medications that are used today allow the women in most cases to have almost full mobility of their legs. They can move from side to side. They can help with pushing out the baby. They can really be a more active participant and be involved in the whole procedure, whereas previously that was not the case. In fact, in some hospitals, not all, but in some hospitals, they'll allow the women to get up and walk, something called a walking epidural, which although you read about a lot in the popular media, the fact is not really many hospitals do this, but the fact is the kind of anesthetics that we give today through the epidurals allow the woman the ability to get up, to sit up, and as I said, in some cases, even to get out of bed and walk. And that's very much different than it used to be years ago.
And Dr. Kamen, in terms of the side effects, it seems like most of them are quite transient. But one of them that you mentioned in the book is an increased incidence of needing to use forceps or vacuum extraction or maybe C-section. Is that a very large increase in incidence, or is that a small increase in incidence?
Well, it depends what you're talking about. With regard to forceps deliveries, there's still a fair degree of controversy about this, and it's largely dependent on the individual practice style of the particular obstetrician. The rates of forceps deliveries vary greatly across the country. To give a few specific examples, there are some hospitals where forceps are used in less than 2 or 3% of the deliveries, and other hospitals where it's used in over 50% of the deliveries. So it's a huge variation. Most of the studies show that there is some increase in the use of forceps deliveries with epidural anesthesia, but it's not really clear how much of a cause and effect that is versus the individual practice style of the obstetrician. Now, a different issue is the incidence of cesarean section, and that's very different. Unlike the forceps rates, which greatly vary across the country, cesarean section rates are pretty constant. The national cesarean section rate now is around 29%, and most hospitals across the country, whether they're large or small or intermediate-sized hospitals, their cesarean section rates are roughly in the mid to high 20s range, so it's not nearly as variable as the forceps rates. And unlike the forceps rates, all of the current evidence with regard to research shows that the epidural anesthesia does not increase the rate of cesarean deliveries.
We're talking today with Dr. William Kamen, the author of Easy Labor, Every Woman's Guide to Choosing Less Pain and More Joy During Childbirth. If you'd like to join the conversation on Health Watch, the number is 503-231-8187. And another point before we go on to something other than epidurals, you do mention in the book something, patient-controlled epidurals, which seemed very intriguing to me, both because the patient has more control over pain administration, and also they apparently tend to use less medication typically in that method.
Yes, that's correct, and that's a very important question. The there's been a trend in the way epidurals have been administered over the years. As mentioned earlier, the trend is towards lower doses of the medications. And the latest trend, which is what you mentioned, the patient-controlled epidural, is a technique where there is an infusion pump, which is used to deliver the medication directly into the epidural. And attached to that infusion pump is a little button, which can be attached to the patient's bedside, and the patient can press the button when they feel like they need additional medication. And what this allows the patient to do is really control how much medication they get. And by doing this, one can really be very flexible and control the amount of medication such that some patients that need less medication can get less medication, whereas others that need more medication can get more medication. And this makes it very flexible and controllable based on the individual patient's needs. And all of the research on this shows that patients tend to be more satisfied, primarily because they feel more in control, but also because they tend to use less medication. And by using less medication, there tends to be less side effects. So it's great for the patients. It's also great for the nurses. And for instance, at my hospital, all of the epidurals are patient-controlled epidurals. One of the things that we say in the book is that it's commonly said that if epidural anesthesia is the Cadillac of pain relief, that the patient-controlled epidural is the technique that gives you the steering wheel. And it really does that, and the patients love it.
Well, let's back up a little bit and talk about the philosophy, the differing philosophies around childbirth. And one of the things I really appreciate about your book, Easy Labor, is that while I think you have a understandable bias towards relieving as much pain as possible, you recognize that different people may have different viewpoints around childbirth, and you even mentioned the difference between pain and suffering. And I was hoping you could address that a little bit, and maybe some of the different types of women you've come across and their philosophies around childbirth.
Well, sure, that's another important question, because of all the areas of medicine, there's probably more consumer information available to patients with regard to pregnancy than almost any other area of medicine. For example, if you go to any popular bookstore and look at the pregnancy section, there is literally hundreds of books on this, and you don't find that when you go to some of the other medical specialties. So women are bombarded with these wide variety of different kinds of information, and often the information is very biased and skewed depending on the particular viewpoint of who may be writing the book or teaching their childbirth classes. What you see is a lot of bias in many childbirth classes towards natural childbirth and non-drug or non-medicine types of pain relief. And this is fine, but only to a degree. The problem is that many of the childbirth educators that teach these classes will really have a strong bias towards this, and the women come in unprepared for the kind of pain that they're going to experience. And they try these various non-drug or non-pharmacologic methods of coping with the pain, and they find that it's just not as effective as they were told that it might be. And then they're set up for a difficult situation where they were anticipating natural childbirth or anticipating that these non-drug methods would help with the pain relief, but it's just not as effective as they were told it's going to be. And then they may be very afraid of getting any of the medications or an epidural, and it just can set up a very awkward situation in that circumstance. So, again, we wanted to try to level the playing field by writing this book and giving all the information that's available about not only the non-drug methods, but the drug methods as well. And not only specific information about the methods, but as you mentioned in your question, Dr. Naiman, the philosophical aspects behind this, in terms of why one might choose a natural childbirth or non-medicated childbirth versus why one might choose to use an epidural or other kinds of medications, and to have people be aware of all the different philosophies behind this, and also to not feel guilty. Many women, I find in my experience, that attempt natural childbirth and find that it's not successful, they feel very guilty. They feel like they've failed. maybe they didn't pay attention enough in their childbirth classes, they weren't doing things right, they just feel like something's gone wrong. And one of the messages of the book is that it doesn't mean that anything has gone wrong. You just need to be prepared for anything in labor. I always say that one of the most predictable things about labor is that it's entirely unpredictable, and you need to come in with an open mind and not be too rigid towards any one particular kind of pain relief. And that's the best way to approach this without possibly setting oneself up for a situation where one feels that one has been a failure.
Well, let's take our first caller. Welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air.
Listening to your call, and it's that natural childbirth method. That's how my kids were born over 20 years ago. That Grantley Dick Reed book, you know.
Yep, that very familiar.
Yeah,
that's great.
Now this C-section rate. What you said the infection rate was 20% in hospitals for births.
The C-section rate, the national C-section rate in the country today is 29%. That varies a little bit from hospital to hospital, but that's roughly the way it is in most hospitals.
Did you make something about infections after that, too?
Infections, no. I don't think I mentioned anything about infection.
Yeah, well, you know, the only thing I'd say is it's all about training. You know, the drugs do get in the way. They interfere with labor and stuff, the concentration and stuff, and to give them that parameter of knowing they can go that route if they have helps them feel less guilty and stuff.
Do you have a question for Dr. Kamen?
Oh, I was asking him about the infection rate. I thought he said something about the infection rate for a hospital C-sections was 20% or something like that. I thought I heard him say.
No. What I said was that the...
Is that true?
Maybe you misheard. The epidural rate for hospitals today is around 65%, but several decades ago, that was around 20%. So the use of epidurals for labor was about 20% about two decades ago.
Well, let's Dr. Kamen, let's talk about some of the natural approaches to childbirth that can be used along with conventional treatment or on their own. One of the sections you have is on water immersion births, and I thought it was interesting that you mentioned a study that shows significant decrease in pain during the first stages of labor during water immersion.
Yes. Well, water immersion is one of the most effective and most popular means of the non-drug methods. And it just makes sense if you think about it. Anyone who's had a tough athletic workout or, you know, maybe a tough round of tennis and you've got some sore muscles, you might feel more comfortable if you're sitting in a warm tub or taking a hot shower. And one can imagine that the uterus is like a muscle getting a workout during labor. And sitting in a warm tub or taking a warm shower can be very effective at relieving the pain, or if not just relieving the pain, then at least distracting and providing a soothing and calming environment. There's been a lot of research on this. It's shown to be effective. It's shown to be safe in most cases. And many hospitals now are providing this either by having showers available in all of the labor rooms, or in many cases having tubs, big tubs like jacuzzis that the patients can stay in for the duration of their labor, and it really is quite effective. Now, in some cases, the patients will even give birth in the water. There's a big difference between actually laboring in the water and giving birth in the water. They're two very different things, but certainly spending some time in water during labor can be extraordinarily effective in relieving or at least decreasing the degree of pain.
And can you tell us your thoughts on Lamaze's philosophy? And also you mentioned another philosophy, the Bradley approach, and it'd be interesting to talk a little bit about both of those.
Sure. Well, both the Lamaze and Bradley approaches are taught in various childbirth classes today. They rely to varying degrees on either breathing techniques or assistance from the husband or the partner, so-called husband-coached childbirth. And the varying degrees of success, there's some difference of opinion with regard to Lamaze instructors versus Bradley instructors in terms of exactly how their techniques should be utilized during labor. But for the patients who utilize these techniques, it's very important to put them all in perspective and realize that these are non-drug methods, and that other things are available as well. And unlike what they might be told by many of the instructors, it doesn't end with just Lamaze or Bradley. There are other types of pain relief techniques that can be used, And one needs to keep an open mind when one comes into labor that the breathing techniques may be not all that that is needed. There may be other things needed as well.
Have they been shown to be effective as far as you know?
Well, this is an interesting question because it's very difficult to do research on this. The reason is that many of the patients that come in using these techniques are very motivated to try to succeed with these techniques. It's difficult to do what we in medicine think of as the holy grail of research, a randomized controlled trial on these kind of things where patients would be randomized to receive one kind of childbirth instruction or not, without taking into account the confounding factors of motivation. In other words, if a patient is very motivated to have a non-drug method of childbirth, then they tend to be more satisfied than the patient who, let's say, wants complete pain relief the minute they have their first contraction. So you got to look at the motivation of the patients, and that is a huge factor in determining how successful these non-drug methods will be.
Well, it's interesting when I think some people's hesitancy about hospital birth might be around impersonal care or not knowing the people until very shortly before they're giving birth. And you mentioned a section, you have a section on labor support and how people who have care the whole through their whole pregnancy, whether with a doula or a midwife or their obstetrician, they're less likely to use anesthesia, they're to need assisted labor like forceps and vacuum extraction, or to need a C-section, which seemed like a remarkable thing that having that connection throughout the whole labor process could be quite vital.
Well, I think it makes a lot of sense that that's the case, and there's no question that that the one-to-one connection that can be made with someone that knows you very well is important. And I think this is the importance of labor support personnel such as doulas who really get to know the patient in a way that maybe an obstetrician might not, or sometimes even the way a midwife may not know the patient. Certainly not the way a nurse who's just meeting the patient for the first time in labor will get to know the patient. So doulas can be very effective for the motivated patient who wants that type of support. And another thing that we talk about in the book is the mixing of alternative and complementary methods with more medical-type methods. And for example, with regard to doulas, who, for any of your listeners who may not be familiar, the doulas are labor support people who generally will be like your pal, your buddy during labor. They don't provide actual nursing services, but they just help you with emotional support and reassurance and education during labor. And traditionally, doulas tended to gravitate towards patients who wanted a natural, unmedicated childbirth. And recently, the trend has been, with a huge increase in epidural anesthesia during labor, for doulas to also be providing support to patients who use epidural anesthesia. And in my opinion, the two are entirely compatible. Just because one has a medical type of pain relief, such as an epidural, doesn't mean one doesn't need the emotional support and reassurance that a doula can provide. So I think that the combination of the two, it's a term that I call the epi-doula, term that I coined for this, is just a wonderful way to experience childbirth. As long as one has a supportive doula who will not make the patient feel guilty about getting an epidural or things like that. And I've seen many patients who have had births with doula support and epidural anesthesia, and it can be a wonderful combination.
Well, let's take another caller. Welcome to Health Watch. You're on the air.
Hi. I didn't hear the doctor talking about acupressure or acupuncture techniques that help during labor, and this is done, I know, in Portland and other places in the United States.
Well, we'll have him address that right now.
Okay.
Thanks.
I didn't get the whole question. The connection was kind of bad. I heard something at the beginning about acupuncture, but
the caller wanted to know about acupressure and acupuncture as an assistant during labor.
Sure. Okay. Well, that's another good question. For one thing, to do this, one needs to have either the appropriate devices or personnel to do this. There have been, in other words, you can't just come in and start sticking needles in somebody during labor and hope that one's getting acupuncture treatment. It needs to be done by a trained professional with the right needles and the right certification and things like that. With regard to treating labor pain itself, the fact is the most of the research on this doesn't show very much efficacy with regard to treating labor pain. But on the other hand, there's some other side effects that can be treated. Now, for example, it's very common in labor for women to be nauseated and throw up. This happens quite frequently during labor. And many of the acupressure techniques, not so much acupuncture, which involves needles, but the acupressure techniques can be used to treat the nausea and vomiting that occurs during labor. Now, these things are available over-the-counter in many drugstores. You can find things that are used, for example, for motion sickness, these little bands, like you can put bands across your wrists that will compress a certain acupoint, which is supposedly to treat nausea. And these things are very effective for motion sickness. And they also seem to be effective for the nausea that occurs not only during pregnancy, but during childbirth as well. So there is some efficacy with regard to some of the side effects, but with regard to pain itself, I have to say the evidence doesn't really bear that out as a very effective method of pain relief.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have a whole lot more time to go into acupuncture. I know you mentioned a couple interesting studies with moxibustion, with the burning of herbs.
Right. Well, of course, that's a whole different story. That's not for pain, but that's for treatment of a breech baby, to a baby that's in the breech position turn around to the more proper position. And there have been some studies that shown that's effective, and the mechanism is not really clear at all, but that's not for treating pain. That's for something else. But it does show this, there's something going on. There's something with regard to these alternative treatments that do have some degree of efficacy in some of these circumstances.
And have you seen effectiveness with acupuncture for helping induce labor?
I have to say no. I've heard of it, but the fact is, at least in my own experience, that's not a very common technique.
Well, we're unfortunately running out of time, but I was hoping you could tell our listeners where they could find further resources if they wanted to look into more information about your book or just general pregnancy resources that you
sure.
like.
Yes, well, we have a website. It's easylabor.net. That's easylabor.net. And we have a variety of links on that site with regard to various types of pregnancy-related information. So if someone's interested in midwives or doulas or other kinds of medical pain relief or just general childbirth and pregnancy information, one can find links from our website at easylabor.net. You can also find a direct link to Amazon.com to purchase the book. It's available in most bookstores as well, but certainly not all bookstores. So Amazon is probably the most reliable way to pick up a copy. And we also have some excerpts from the book on the website, including the introduction, which, as you mentioned earlier, Dr. Naiman, there's a lot of philosophical differences with regard to pain relief during childbirth. And in the few pages of the introduction of our book, we address head-on what these philosophical controversies are and how we plan to deal with them in the book. So one can find the entire introduction on our website as well.
Well, I appreciate you being on Health Watch, Dr. Kamen.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Today we are talking with Dr. William Kamen, the author of Easy Labor, Every Woman's Guide to Choosing Less Pain and More Joy During Childbirth. Stay tuned for the rest of the Monday Morning Radio Z.
Next, it's Earthwatch with Dave Mazza. He interviews environmental journalist David Helvarg about the state of the world's oceans. And at 11 o'clock on Democracy Now!, the guest is James Yee, a Muslim chaplain who was posted in Guantanamo Bay in 2002 and later was accused of espionage and locked up in a Navy prison. Also, tune in tonight at 6 o'clock on Labor Radio. Host Don McIntosh interviews the author of The Disposable American, Layoffs and Their Consequences.